DW Africa Link.
As an international journalist, I've seen firsthand how powerful our stories can be. But here is the troubling reality. When the world hears about Africa, it often hears in narratives tipped in stereotypes, conflict, and poverty that go hand in hand with disease and corruption. Among what we rarely see are the stories that reflect Africa's innovation, resilience, and vast potential, especially in the hands of its youth. Today, we dive into the impact of these narratives and why it's high time for a more balanced view. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
In 2024, Africa's losses due to international media's fixation on negative stereotypes, depictions of poverty, corruption, and conflict are costing the continent a staggering 3.2 billion euros every year in inflated interest payments on sovereign debt. These distorted portrayals don't just misrepresent Africa's diverse realities. They amplify perceived risks, driving up borrowing costs and discouraging investment. This narrative affects Africa's economies profoundly, obscuring real opportunities and excavating financial disparities. What could these funds achieve instead? They could educate millions of children, deliver clean water to communities, or fight pressing climate impacts across the continent. Today, we'll unpack the true costs of these narratives and the urgent pressing need for a balanced media lens. What is the price of this narrow lens? Joining me to do that is Ambi Bola Ogundairo from Africa No Filter. And as you are all aware, I'm also a journalist with international media. And today I just thought, why not bring on board my colleague, also a senior editor here at DW, Crispin Mwakideo. Thank you so much, Crispin and Ambi Bola, for joining us today. Now, today we are talking about negative stereotypes in media that has translated into inflated interest rates for African sovereign debt. How would you explain that? Where is the media going wrong?
Wow, I'm careful to answer the question of where the media is going wrong, because we like to see the media as our ally simply because they're such powerful people, and if what we want them to do is recognize that they can use their power for good. But generally, in terms of how, these negative stereotypes translate into inflated interest, it's in the contribution to a perception that Africa is more risky than it is. At the point of doing this research, we checked what kind of coverage African countries get, especially around their elections. We compared it with what non-African countries in the study get. We also checked the risk level. So according to, global indices like the Electoral Index, Political Stability Index, we came up with, okay, this is where you are supposed to be. That is where you are supposed to be. For example, Thailand and Egypt are both, at par. So when they go to meet World Bank for a loan, ideally they should be getting the same, interest rate when they borrow money, which is something that is common to almost all countries. Yet we find that the rate that Egypt is getting is way more than what Thailand is getting. Why, you may ask? It's because there is this unnamed risk premium attached to it that is correlating with the kind of stories people hear about Egypt. For example, if you continually hear that, there is so much violence, there's political instability, which there may be, but what we're talking about is a disproportionate emphasis on those kind of stories, right? So that leads to the continual narrative that, if you want to do business in Africa, you need to be prepared to lose your money. And so therefore, probably at the point where you're lending them money, factor that in so that you get more money. It's Yeah, so that's the linear, that's the simplified way of putting it, how, you know, negative stereotypes. And when you say what media are doing wrong, like I said, it's not a calling out issue, but really it's in dependence on existing stereotypes. So from our research, we know that there are five main frames that stories about Africa continue to be told. And I say continue because some of them are outdated, some of them don't even apply in particular contexts, but we see an insistence on them being used. And those frames are corruption, disease, poor leadership, violence, and poverty. And I say, I call them lazy stereotypes. And I'm going to give an example. I once saw a headline where they were talking about the Ashenda Festival, you know, happening in Ethiopia. And the headline was "Post-War Joy in Tigray." And I read the thing and it had nothing to do with war. So the question is, why do you insist on defining, you know, this place, these countries on this continent with these frames, even when it doesn't apply in certain situations?
You know, Abimbola, sometimes it becomes so confusing. I'm a journalist myself, right? And I don't think like even as an African who's working for an international media, I'll just come out here and start reporting things that are not factual, right? Let's give an example. We talk of maybe a country X goes to IMF, gets a debt saying that they want to improve the health system in the country.
Yeah.
But then later, Josie, as a journalist, visits this country X to just look and report on the health system in the country. You find that there are no maternity wards. There's no simple drug like paracetamol. The hospitals are dilapidated. But country X has collected billions from IMF debt, right? So am I going to just say, okay, because I don't want this country X to be put in a bad space so that the interest rate or whatever, so I will not report on this?
Absolutely not. In fact, we need the media to report on these things happening because people need to know. We need to hold duty bearers accountable. What we are advocating for is not an erasing of those kind of stories. It's a reduction in the disproportionate emphasis on them. So, for example, if you entered a country, they borrowed, but then you notice in the country that, you know, the entrepreneurship sector is actually booming, you know, the cultural space is very lively. People are making money from that. The music scene is great. Would it catch your attention the same way, you know, the other side would have? So we're saying there's been, and it's maybe human nature. It's the way things have always been. When things are bad, they're more likely to grab your attention, right? They're more likely to stand out and say, you know what, this is the one you should talk about. Yet there's so much that is not related to that that also needs space in the news and in the stories we tell. And the reason for this is simple. When a singular story is being told over time, it now starts to diminish the identity of a place to just that one thing. I'm very sure you said you're from Zimbabwe. There are so many things about your country you're proud of that you associate with, you know, with joy, with goodness. And if someone were to say, you know what, why should I go to Zimbabwe? You probably can easily count five things, you know, to tell to them. But we don't find those five things coming out in the news. What we are saying is, as much as we're reporting on the ills, it would be great to see the good, however small or negligible we think it is, to come up. And that's the only way we paint a truly wholesome reflection, you know, of the society, where the good has space, the bad has space, and the ugly as well has space.
But Abimbola, you wouldn't sit comfortably in your home when you're being talked about badly, would you?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Now, this takes me to this question. Then why is Africa portrayed negatively in the media and the leaders rarely make efforts to change the narrative?
That's a really good question. So I would say, first of all, there's the issue of even awareness of the problem. And I'm going to give you an example. I don't know if you know of something called the yellow filter. When you're watching movies and all of a sudden Africa comes on and the screen goes yellow and it looks sickly, it looks very somehow and whatnot. So I'm watching one of my favorite shows, right, with my friends, and it comes on and I'm so upset, like, what do you mean? This is not my Lagos. You know, they were in New York and all of a sudden they went to Lagos and everywhere went yellow. And I'm like, this makes no sense. You know, this is not where I grew up. This is not my city. And my friend beside me is like, well, I don't see a problem with it. Maybe it's just a technique. Maybe it's just a this. It took a lot of research, you know, going into, so where did the yellow filter come from? What's the impact? To recognize that it's actually a conditioning, right? Such that when you think of Africa, you think, oh, that place is not very crisp. You know, the oxygen is yellow. When you think of Russia, you're like, oh, that place, they're so cold and so yeah. distant. You know, there's ways in which stories shape. But you find that a lot of people are not even cognizant, right, of the narratives that are emerging from the stories they consume and the stories they produce even about themselves. So I wouldn't say it's an African leader problem. I would say it's maybe something common to the average African, where we only see what we say. We do not really take that bird's eye view to look at how everything comes together to continually shape how other people see us and how we see ourselves. But now that we have this research, right, that is putting a cost, a real cost, a figure to what it's costing Africa, $4.2 billion per year for just a tiny part that we've been able to actually account for, notwithstanding, not even counting the mass migration happening from the continent, the loss in confidence, you know, the news avoidance, and generally all those other consequences, right, of having bad narratives. So when people don't take, you know, note of, when they're not even aware that there is a problem, that's an issue. So we're hoping this report helps that. Now, beyond being aware, it's the skills. It's the storytelling skills. People in the media, for example, sometimes I speak with correspondents who say, well, this is the way it's always been done. And, you know, that's just it. But there's that need to question, to say, okay, yes, you've heard of Africa rising since, I don't know, 3 decades ago. Have you questioned where that narrative came from? What does it actually mean? When people keep thinking Africa is still a country, have you questioned yourself to check, okay, what are the ways I can tell my stories differently? Are there voices I keep emphasizing? Whenever I talk about Africa, am I truly including the 54 countries? Am I truly making sure that the voices of the varied demographies are being represented so that the picture that the people who read my stories see is full enough? It's not limited to the same thing over and over and over again. So it's not an African leader's issue, even though they also have a role to play. It would be great to see a lot more collaboration between, you know, local and foreign correspondents. It would be great to see resources put into the media space to help them develop in terms of trainings. It would be great to see just partnerships with even international media outlets. It would be great to see African leaders also demand, you know, some form of accountability for the way their people, their countries are spoken about, you know, to say, you know, that's not true. You know, you need to check that. That's not how we want our stories to be told. But if you address this, that, and this, and that, with this evidence, we stand a better chance of creating better narratives.
But for you, Crispin, how different is Western media reported, e.g., we're talking of image portrayed of the US, China, and Europe compared to Africa?
Well, there's a big difference. If you look at, let's say, how the United States portrays itself in the media, or the kind of narrative that it has tried to shape over the years. When you talk about the US, you mainly think about the American dream. You think about how you can make it big in the United States, right? But they don't really go into details, into explaining, into showing how tough, you know, life is for the average American. They have to do like 2-3 jobs, their healthcare system, the violence that is there, the poverty that is there, that is hardly spoken about in the media. What you usually see from Hollywood, from Netflix movies, from any sort of sporting events and entertainers, it's mostly, yeah, the life there is just, it's just beautiful. It's great. The same thing goes pretty much about the West, Europe. China is also is a bit difficult to talk about because it's still kind of closed. But again, there's been rapid growth, and that's what we know now about China. They are big manufacturers, they're skyscrapers. It's a booming economy. So these are the kind of narratives that they try to push out there. And that's why, it has a big impact on how you perceive these countries or these regions. Whereas for us in Africa, we have struggle to shape our narrative in that, for example, we are the richest continent in terms of natural resources. Mm-hmm. That is just barely barely beginning to talk about that now. We still focus a lot, or at least the international media, and let's say the other continents, when they look at Africa, they just see poverty, corruption, disease, conflict and all that kind of stuff.
But who is to blame, Crispin? Because I had asked this question also to Abim Bolat, that would you sit comfortably in your home when someone is talking bad about you? Why is it that even the African leaders are not also like making efforts to change the narrative?
I think it's not easy. I mean, some are trying, like President Paul Kagame of Rwanda has already come out very strongly and spoken about how Africa needs to take charge of its own narrative. But I think, I mean, we have suffered centuries of enslavement and years and years and years of colonization. So our self-esteem in as Africans itself has been dented for quite some time. So we do look at ourselves with a bit of inferiority complex when we look at other regions, when we want to compare ourselves to the United States, to Europe, like, you know, northern countries or the Western Hemisphere. We look at ourselves and we look, we are not that well off, which is not true, because they actually depend on Africa for their own survival to a larger extent. Right? They need our oil, they need our mineral. We all know how much Africa is important for the world economy, but we don't want to, or we are not acknowledging the richness that we have, the diversity that we have, you know, that we bring to the table. And I hope that the younger generation, which I can kind of like see they're beginning to realize that, will change the narrative, and you know, the future generation in Africa will be one that is very proud of being an African and also telling their story as it is, because we don't have to hide when things are wrong. We can say, you know, okay, there's conflict here and there, but at the same time, we shouldn't hide the fact that, you know, we hardly hear of anything, let's say, from Mauritius. Mauritius is an African country, but absolutely, why is it not in the news? Because things are just going on well there, you know.
By the way, I want to visit Mauritius. Now that you touched on President Paul Kagame of Rwanda, Crispin, just a quick one before we bring back Abim Bolat. You know, he's taken rebranding his country seriously, using different methods, either paying lobbies or sponsorship deals with top football deals like Arsenal. You know that, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just thinking that in fact, there's actually another partnership coming up with Bayern Munich. These deals have paid off, because when you talk of Rwanda, no matter how much people want to talk negatively about Rwanda, people always see the positive side of it. Is there a leaf other countries can borrow from Rwanda? Talking of your country as well, Kenya, your president is always making foreign trips. Is this what he's also trying to achieve?
No, those are two different comparisons. I think Kagame has done a very good job. He's done a good job in as far as turning Rwanda around, just, you know, like 30 years, was it 20? No, let's say 30 years now since the genocide, right? And now you're right when you talk about how investors look at Rwanda, how even like just tourists view Rwanda. It's perceived to be very clean, very safe and secure, politically stable. So all these are things that, you know, if you want to put your money somewhere, you look at all these things. And he was criticized in the beginning for spending a lot of money to advertise Rwanda with the Arsenal team.
Yeah.
But I think it paid off eventually, because people began to ask, okay, where is Rwanda? I want to visit. I want to go, I don't know, see the gorillas. And when you go there, then you are greeted by this country, which is really, you know, clean and infrastructure, it's working, transport is working. I mean, you know, so it's not just about marketing, but it's also, even when people come, they are also, they witness the kind of things that you have been selling.
Where they are putting their money.
Exactly. Yeah. So you sell what actually is real and tangible. And people come there and they see, and then they're like, okay, I mean, Rwanda is one of the best countries in Africa to visit. Mm. So for President Ruto in Kenya, that's a kind of like a different thing. He wants to focus, I think he wants to focus more on the diaspora, on the Kenyan diaspora. He's been selling more to the diaspora and, of course, to tourists, because Kenya is very tourist reliant. But he's not done a good job in as far as branding the country as one that is, you need to come and visit, you need to come and invest.
Yeah.
So it's still a trial and error kind of thing for him.
Mm-hmm. Now to you, Abim Bolat, let's talk about your president as well. He's also been taking foreign trips. Is he trying to go the Kagame way?
I would be so happy to know that he is, but to the best of my knowledge, not yet. But I remain hopeful. And I say that because I really, really, you know, believe in the potential of, you know, Nigerians, especially young people, just in the way that they are making names for themselves. And I think it's typical of all Africans generally. There's a demand. You know, when you ask, you know, the African leaders aren't doing it. If we check and see, the leaders may not be doing it, but the citizens are. They are demanding spaces in different places. Check fashion, check music on the global scene, you know, check entertainment. You know, it's happening. Mauritius is an African country, right? And from, I guess, if you're like me, when you think Mauritius, you think good things. You're like, oh, that place is working and whatnot. And why exactly does it not feature prominently when people think Africa? It's simply because, you know, for some reason, if it bleeds, it leads. What people think is the most popular is the bad things. It's the really not so great thing. So I really commend Paul Kagame. He managed to turn, you know, that around. But I would say it's not necessarily in him being a leader. It's just in the intentionality that he took, you know, to creating that perception. And if anyone, whether in the private sector, in the civil society, as a citizenship, in leadership, in governance, if we apply the same intentionality, even as a media organization, to saying, okay, there is a cost. If we take a bird's eye view to this, if we continue the way we are going, there's damage being done. The damage comes across in the opportunities not being taken advantage of, people who are not investing in the continent. Possibly, if we check how FDIs are affected, how tourism in other parts, you know, of the continent are being affected, there is a real cost to this. How can we flip this around and turn it into an opportunity instead? Instead of going about and talking about the bad, 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 how can we begin to shed light or at least train ourselves? And I say train ourselves as media because there's evidence, right, that people want good news. People are actually mentally fatigued, you know, with bad news. People, there's news avoidance on the rise. Mental health is at stake. People go to TikTok.
I don't know, Crispin, do you want to add something on that? Because Abimbola is saying that the narratives that Africa is being portrayed, sometimes it can be a small city or a small place in Nigeria, Taraba State. And then, but when it's written or reported by the international media, it's reported as if it's the whole Africa, and Africa is not a country.
Yeah, that is true. We have a big problem with that. The international media has a big problem with that, to just bundle the 54 countries into one big country and just label it as, you know, as Africa. And we've come a long way, I must say. I think there's little by little change in the way people now want to tell these stories from the international media perspective. But still, you once in a while you come across those headlines which tend to, mpox in Africa. Yeah. There are some countries in Africa where mpox. It's not there. But you know, it's just like mpox now. There's an outbreak of mpox, and people are scared. They will not want to come to any African country because they think,
it's the whole of Africa.
Yes, yeah. Which is not entirely true. So I think that's, you never hear of such kind of labeling or titles in Europe. Mm. Yeah, you would hear only, there's a bad flu outbreak in France. So it's safe to go to Germany, even though here they have open borders, Schengen, but hardly would they say, bad flu outbreak in Europe. So that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. Now, do local African media also fuel this negative stereotype of the continent, Crispin, in your opinion? Because I think we also adapt a lot of stories from Africa. We have local correspondents.
Yes, to some extent they do. And that's also not so much, I don't want to blame them, because we know how media works. Media works and sells mostly on bad news. And in Africa, being the continent that is perceived internationally as just a continent of bad news and not really any good news, so they tend to sell, especially to the international media, this really horrible news. Oh, there's been this terrorist attack.
To stay relevant.
To stay relevant, and also to keep the news cycle going. Yeah? Mm. So we hardly hear of economic progress, infrastructure development, innovations. Again, we are beginning to touch on that, but we are not giving them the seriousness that they deserve. This, because these are really positive stories of lives being changed. I think that there is a little bit of hypocrisy also from the international media, in as far as portrayal of stories in Africa. And a good example is, I don't want to say good because it was not a good example, but during the Westgate attack in Kenya, we saw, I believe it was the New York Post, the New York Times, that published, you know, like really graphic images of the victims of this terrorist attack. And there was a bit of uproar, But actually, they got these images from someone who was there, who was probably a local person. But again, mass shootings happen in the US almost every single day. And if you Google a mass shooting in the USA, you would hardly see images of these victims because they protect their own, they give them dignity. And I think that we as a local correspondents, local reporters, we also have to cultivate that kind of attitude that we need to respect the dead, we need to respect the victims, and give them some kind of privacy as well. You can tell a story without necessarily, you know, throwing graphic images, blood, and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Now, senior editor at DW, Crispin Mwakideo, thank you so much. Also, Abimbola Ogundairo from Africa No Filter, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but an integral part of our community. And your engagement is crucial in shaping the direction of our discussions. We highly value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until next time, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.